Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's the Opperman Report. Join digital forensic investigator and PI Ed Opperman for an in-depth discussion of conspiracy theories, strategy of New World Order resistance, high-profile court cases in the news, and interviews with expert guests and authors on these topics and more. It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. You can find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting through my website, emailrevealer.com. You just email me directly at oppermaninvestigations@gmail.com. If you like the show, be sure and check out our Patreon. All the content we put out Monday to Friday, AM, FM radio, you could find on Patreon with all the commercials, the ads cut out. So if you miss something, it'll be right there on Patreon. Plus, we put out exclusive content just for Patreon subscribers and supporters. So you go to Opperman Report Patreon. Our archives you can find for free at Spreaker.com. And also every Friday night, I do a live show on Spreaker, a solo show, just updating you what's going on during the week. And there's a chat room. And also, too, you get an email notification anytime we put up new content on Spreaker. And we do put up repeats every night, do classic episodes. And if you go to Spreaker and you Google Columbine, we've done quite a few shows about the Columbine shooting that took place, one of the first big mass tragic shootings in a school. We've done several shows on that in the past, and today we're blessed to have Jen Thompson, who's a survivor of the shooting at Columbine, and has rather exclusive information and eyewitness testimony that she believes, and I believe, has been suppressed in the media. So, Jen Thompson, are you there?
Yes, hello. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, because we were even talking off the air. I know how difficult this is to go back and recall these traumatic memories, not just before the show, then during the show, but then it sticks with you even after the show, too. So we said this is so important for the audience to know. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to, you know, have the opportunity to share the truth.
Yeah. So before we get into Columbine, tell us about yourself. Who is Jen Thompson?
Well, I'm a 39-year-old mom and wife. I've got a little single miracle baby living out in the outskirts of Parker, Colorado. I was born and raised in Littleton and grew up in a house right across the street from Columbine.
Ooh, right across the street. Wow. It really never ended, right? You had that memory going on every day till you moved, I guess.
Yeah, it was, especially while the media was around Columbine, they were right over and around my house as well for several months.
Oh, my God. It never ended. Before that tragic day, the shooting, did you know any of these people involved?
I knew their faces, and I had some brief encounters with some of them. Like, Dylan and Eric would come out individually to the smoker's pit, where I would hang out frequently with many of my friends. When they would come out, they would be by themselves, and they would hang out along the fence, so they were away from the group. Dylan would come out, he would never talk to anybody. Eric, he might say a few words and things, but, you know, he would usually pretty well keep to himself. There was a time where I tried to approach the whole trench coat group when they were collected at the end of the hallway, they had this special place they would always meet up with each other. And I went over to their group and I tried to talk to them, and they acted like they were too good for me, even though I'm wearing all black and I'm an art student and I'm, you know, into similar music and things, and they shunned me. There was also a time where I was walking down the middle hallway, where most people didn't like using that hallway, so there wasn't generally a lot of people in that hallway at any time. I was walking to the south, and Dylan was walking to the north, and I saw that he was dressed similarly to me, you know, wearing all black and probably in the same music, so I smiled at him, thinking I could befriend him. And he looked at me like he wanted to kill me. Like, I have never had somebody look at me that evil, that dark, sinister look, like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, you know. So I made mental note of, don't ever smile at that guy again. Mm. They don't want to be your friend, and you don't want to be their friend either. They didn't want to be friends with anybody else. They wanted to keep to their own little group.
Were they older than you?
Yes, they were. I was a young sophomore at the time. I was 15 the day of the shooting, and they were seniors who, you know, were 18 years old, 17, 18 years old. So, yeah, they were a little bit older. Now, but I hung out with people in this. My boyfriend was a senior at the time, so I hung out with different cliques and different ages.
Now, you're describing them as the trench coat group. How many people were in that trench coat group?
Probably about 15 to 20, maybe just a little over 20. I had even heard about them when I was in middle school, and even though I was one of the outcast kids, when I heard about them through my friends, they were making fun of them. Like, you know, these are some nerdy kids trying to act like they're all tough. And I remember my other friends just making jokes about them, even when we were in middle school and they were in high school.
Hmm. And then you said that you also like to wear black, and you assumed you listened to the same type of music. So how would you describe yourself? Like goth, punk rock? Well, how would you describe yourself?
Well, I prefer listening to heavy metal, rock and roll, some punk rock. While I was more into metal, I had a lot of punk rock. I had a lot of friends that, you know, were the art kids. I was also very eclectic, so I would hang out with people from all different groups. If people were nice to me, I'd be nice to them, and we'd become friends. The majority of my friends were the people with, you know, the band T-shirts, the piercings, the weird haircuts with different colors and stuff, you know, the fun people to look at.
Gotcha. And what kind of music were the Trench Coat group listening to? Do we know?
They were into heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to know, there's a lot of distortion on your phone line. Are you like on a cell phone?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Do you have like a, is it on speakerphone or is it, how do you have it set up?
No. I just have it on regular phone.
Gotcha. Okay, do you have like a little headset or a microphone you can use on that?
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's, what are you going to do, right? We're just trying to muscle through this, right? That's the best we could do. Now,
I'm wondering if I don't move somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah, the less you move, that always helps. Now, you mentioned at one time you smiled, you tried to be friendly with them, and they rejected that. Were there any other negative occurrences between them?
Yeah, they just really, whenever I saw them, they just wanted to isolate themselves. They didn't want to interact with anybody outside their group. They, you know, if you even tried, they didn't want it. They told me when I came up to try and befriend them that they had enough friends already. So, no. I didn't have a whole lot of experiences with them, but what I did notice, they were just complete loners, you know.
Outcasts?
Yes, very much. And they wanted to be like that, though,
right.
It seemed, you know.
No.
It's only so much the groups, the other cliques can push them into it, but they wanted to actually that way because they rejected anybody else new.
Now, is it How feasible is it for two members of this trench coat group to be making these elaborate plans, stockpiling weapons, building bombs, shaving down shotguns, sawing off shotgun barrels, and other members of this group not being aware of this?
I think it would be impossible for just two boys to get that much in there. There was, you know, 87 bombs and so much different, ammunition and guns that they brought in. It was definitely, it had to be more than just those two boys. I was also told that we had had prom that weekend before. The shooting happened on a Tuesday, and then that weekend before we had had prom and had an after prom party at the school where they would put up these fake walls in front of all the lockers down the hallway to make it seem like you're in a different place than being at school, like some beautiful getaway. So there was space between those walls and the locker for people to sneak behind and bring in other, like, bombs in duffel bags and then hide them at the after prom so nobody could see them bringing them in or doing any of that because they were hidden by those fake walls.
Okay, that's interesting. That's the first I've ever heard of that. That's interesting.
That's now, interesting. That's the first you've heard of it because, yeah, I've heard it from a few different friends that were, you know, there at after prom saying they had seen, you know, people going in the back behind them. They couldn't see what they were doing, but they could tell that, you know, people were behind those walls doing something.
Right, right. Now what about this group, again, the trench coat group? Did they have families that were in law enforcement and the military and stuff like that?
I wasn't told until afterward that I don't have it officially, but I've had other people tell me that they had heard the same thing, that Eric's uncle, his dad's brother, was a firefighter. And I want to say it was for, like, Arvada, somewhere up there.
Yeah, you really broke up there. Are you there?
Okay.
Yeah, you said something about Arvada.
Okay. I had heard that Eric had an uncle. His dad's brother was a firefighter for Arvada, which is just north of Denver, the metro area. So, you know, 20 minutes from Denver.
Now, what about this the multimedia, this film group? Now, was that dominated by the trench coat group?
It was dominated mainly by Dylan and Eric because they were in this special class for it. They were also in charge of the daily announcements that came over. It was a video that came over everybody's TV in every classroom for about 5 minutes every Tuesday morning. And it said, or that Tuesday morning, with the quote of the day, after all the announcements are made, there's always a quote of the day. And for Tuesday, April 20th, it was in German. And only the German exchange student knew what it said. She told me later on, she was, you know, very adamant about never ditching or anything because she was an exchange student. She didn't want to ruin what she had going. And so when she saw that, that quote, then she decided it was time to ditch. Because the quote said in German, "Prepare yourselves, for you're all going to die today."
Wow. And she never told anybody else?
Oh, the German girl told other people afterward.
Afterward, yes, yeah.
I don't think she told, I think she maybe had tried to tell other people, but, you know, it was also, how are you going to explain that to other people to the point where you don't look like a crazy person?
Right. And kids are so self-conscious. They don't want to look different. They don't want to be out of place. They don't want to draw attention to themselves. Just fascinating. Now, is there anything that occurred before the day of the shooting that I haven't asked you that you want the audience to know about?
There was also Brooks Brown was a good friend of mine,
right,
for many, many years, and he was associated with them. He was friends with them for a while, long before the shooting happened. And then they had a falling out that to a really dark, dark place where they were threatening Brooks's life and telling him, you know, they were going to do all these awful things to him. The Brooks family, Brooks and his parents, tried to tell the cops about Eric's, you know, crazy behavior and his crazy threats and all these things, and that he was unhinged and that somebody needed to get this boy some help. And they had also broken into a van, I believe, and they didn't get any criminal charges from that when they should have. The cops, they had 2 years before the shooting where they could have gotten these boys some help and, you know, in a way prevented the shooting if they had just listened to the Browns, but they didn't.
Yeah, I had Brooke Brown, his father, on the show, too. He just wrote a book recently, and he told that whole story there and that whole bizarre situation, like you said, about that criminal burglary of the van, alarm company van, like a burglar alarm company van, I believe it was. Yeah.
Right.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
What were you going to say?
I was just saying, yeah, that's right. It was a full-size van. I want to say it was a big white van.
Hmm. Okay. I always,
the photos of.
That's interesting. I always imagined it was like a small, like a van, you know, like a little travel type van. That's interesting. Okay. Now what about the day of the incident? What was your experience that day?
Well, I was usually the kind of person, you know, being a smoker and hanging out with all the art kids, where I would ditch on 420 every year. My mom was usually okay with it because it was a one-day thing and it was planned out. Well, that day, she wouldn't let me ditch because I had a D in biology and I had a test that day. So I had to at least go to class and go take my test, which was in fifth hour. I had fourth hour off. I was hanging out at the smoker's pit. Nice sunny day. It was the first warm enough day in the whole year that it was the first time that year I decided to wear a dress. Nice blue skies, little puffs of clouds in the sky. It just seemed like a nice day. I'm hanging out at the pit. Not many people are there because most people are ditching. My friend Tony and my friend Taryn saying, you know, I don't want to be here. I'm having a bad day because I'm here. And, you know, I want to be, you know, away with all my other friends. They're saying, well, you know, why don't you just ditch anyway? And I'm standing there telling them about my test. And Eric Harris is about 10 feet away from where we're standing. He's all, oh, yeah, not to mention it's Hitler's birthday. As if he's trying to give me another reason why I should ditch. And I had to go do my test, so I figured I'll ditch after I do my test. And at the end of fourth hour, I walked away from Eric and my other two friends that were still out the pit. I put on my headphones listening to a song called Hollow by Pantera, which in itself is very prophetic, because it sings about close with his mother as she cries endlessly, Lord, I miss him, at least what's remembered. It's about death. So it was very interesting that that happened. And then I walk into the school to go meet up with my boyfriend. He is a senior, so he was done after the fourth hour, and I wanted to one of them, I said, okay, you know, as I'm waiting for him to get out of class, there's not many people in the hallway, but there are quite a few, you know, lingering people that are starting to filter in slowly. And I take notice just before the bell releases to get the classes out, I see one of the trench coat guys holding a very heavy duffel bag. Now, I had been in weights class every semester. I was, you know, very into being I liked working out a lot, and I liked hanging out with all these jocks, football guys, teaching them how to lift properly and stuff. So I knew all the people that were in weights classes and wrestling, and he was definitely not in it. So to see him carrying this very, very heavy duffel bag that's making him tilt to one side because it's so heavy really stuck out to me. It was black, completely black bag with a long, like about a foot long and 3 inches wide, yellow reflective strip right underneath the handles. And he was heading straight for the gym. I looked at that and thought, that's really weird. I've never seen that guy carry a bag like that, let alone never seen him over by the gym in the weights room. So I made mental note of seeing that. After he passed, the bell rang. My boyfriend came out. I said, I want to ditch with you. Just let me go with you. He said, no, you need to go take your test. Call me when you're done with your test, and I'll come back and I'll come get you. And, of course, he regretted that decision very quickly. I went to class. On my way to class, I saw Isaiah Scholes for the very last time. He and I are both short, so he was waving across the crowded hallway, standing on his tiptoes. I went into class, started to take the test, and a few minutes into the test, it's probably about 11:15 is when that class started, so 11:20-ish, one of the teachers comes up to our door. We have two doors to the classroom, and I'm sitting next to the front one. And the teacher, Mrs. Miller, taps on the glass and gives the teacher the come here finger, because his desk is straight from that door. He runs out. He leaves. He went to go tell others and warn others, but he just left us.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we were trapped in there from 11:20 till 2:57. Now, I had prepared mentally for this somehow, some way. My intuition told me to. So I was being super vigilant. I was not letting the fear take over when, you know, the fire alarm went off and the stampede of people came up from the cafeteria just before the fire alarm goes off. And we're hearing all probably people that. And senior pranks. This is the time of year for senior pranks. That's probably what's going on. But as soon as we heard that fire alarm, we're like, okay, maybe not. Maybe it's not. Should we be running too? So I go out in the hallway to see if we should be running out of the building as well. And the teacher that had asked Mr. Peterson, my teacher, to come out, Mrs. Miller, she's at the end of the hallway about 25 feet. Says there's always friends, get back in the classroom and hide. I'm going to lock your doors. So I go back in the classroom with the two boys that had followed me into the hallway and tell the rest of our class, you know, there's supposedly guys with guns and we need to hide. They're going to lock our doors. We need to get down. And so we went into the back corner of the room where it conjoined with another classroom. So we had two classes kind of huddled together on the floor, and we weren't really hiding, so we started flipping tables. It was science class, so we had big tables that were like 5 feet by 3 feet, so we made a barricade with the tables so that anybody that walked by our hall in the hallway couldn't look into our doors and just see us sitting there.
Now, whose idea was that? Did certain kids take up leadership positions and say, hey, let's do this?
Yeah, actually, I was one of those people that, because the teacher had ditched out on us, I started taking over as in my group, and I'm starting to get a table flipped over, and like one or two other boys had started to, and then Mr. Johnson, the teacher that didn't leave, that was in the conjoined classroom door that we were, you know, our two classes were together, Mr. Johnson came into our room, and he told us, you need to flip these tables and help her. You know, help make a barricade. I remember him saying, you know, help her do this, because everybody else was like deer in headlights.
Right.
Most people just froze up. They didn't know what to do. They were just terrified and, you know, silent. So nobody really wanted to take over. We had three teachers, you know, that were all on the other side of the door. So my group, my class, didn't really have a teacher watching over them. The teachers that were, you know, present in our group that were on the other side of the door were more concerned with Mr. Sanders, because as soon as the teacher had locked our doors to the hallway, Mr. Sanders had gone by, and I had looked out the second hallway door window and saw a trail of blood that led to that classroom. So, of course, the gunmen could follow that trail, and they did. Because later on, I was looking in between the tables to look out the hallway. I was, you know, looking at my classroom, what was going on. I was looking out the window, trying to be vigilant. And I would peek in between the tables, you know, like sincerely felt like a little spy, because, you know, I'm looking through the slit in between the tables. And I see these people outside my classroom. I see Dylan, and he's got his back to me. And he's kind of like bouncing around, agitated and upset. And then another person comes up to talk to him. As soon as I saw this other person, I thought, this is help. We're being saved. This looks like some guy in the military. It looked like a cop had taken off his uniform and just had his white T-shirt on to be less intimidating. And I'm telling my group, I think it's over now. I think we're being saved. This is just before noon at 11:45. Okay. I'm thinking, great.
Let me stop you there.
Okay.
Now, you saw Dylan. Now, this other gentleman you saw, was he older than Dylan?
He was much older, yes. I want to say he was in his late 20s to early 30s. I thought he was a police officer or somebody who had been in the military because of his thick neck and muscles and his buzz cut.
Gotcha. Now, what about any paraphernalia, like any kind of gear?
The reason why I knew he wasn't help was because when he was talking to Dylan, he held up his hands at one point to say, I don't know, and he was holding a sawed-off shotgun with a tan handle. And that's when I told my friends, you know, all my group, my heart sank, that this isn't help, that he's one of the gunmen. There's more than one.
And this wasn't someone who was like from the school that was part of this trench coat group?
Most definitely not. This is not anybody I had ever seen before. And I had just seen Eric.
Right.
I had seen Eric at 11:05, 11:10, and this was at 11:45. Yeah, I know it was definitely not Eric.
Okay, so and what were Eric and Dylan wearing? Were they wearing T-shirts as well? What were they wearing?
Eric was actually wearing a white T-shirt, the same kind of style, white short sleeve, no pocket, just a regular undershirt. But Eric had, what is that called, the gun straps?
Right.
Like around his shoulders, so he would have that black stripe on the front of his chest. This guy didn't have that. This guy was also so buff that his sleeves on his arms were tight around his muscles. Now, if you look at any pictures of Eric that day, you can see the gun straps that he's wearing, and you can also see how baggy the T-shirt is on his arms. It is not the same person.
Well, clearly, yeah, this memory is burned into your memory, this vision here, so there's no doubt about that. Oh, okay, so then what happened? Did you see where this third person went?
Well, they were talking about wanting to get into the classroom because of the trail of blood, and they were using the butts of their guns to try and break the handle, and that wasn't working, and they didn't want to shoot it because of the metal handle and the shrapnel, so they decided to leave a pipe bomb there and run off. They ran down, further down in the south side of the science wing. They went to the east. So if you go to, we were in an L shape in the corner. So if you went to the left, you go one more classroom over, you're at the top of the stairs to the cafeteria. But if you go to the right, then you'll just go down the main part of the science wing. And that's where they went down to just get away from the bomb because it actually went off.
Right.
It set the set it on fire and everything. And thankfully, I was paying attention to that. And I told Mrs. Miller about it. Mrs. Miller, wonderful, wonderful person. I don't know what I would have done that day without her. She literally saved our lives. Mr. Sanders, he warned us first. Got to give him lots of praise. He saved hundreds of people. But Mrs. Miller, she really helped us so much by locking the doors. And then she also went out and took the huge fire extinguisher and put out the pipe bomb fire before the boys came back and got back to safety.
Incredible.
She was amazing.
Let me interrupt you. That is amazing. Let me interrupt you now. Okay. Now, you saw this gentleman in the white shirt with the muscles. Okay. Now, what about the people around you? Did anybody else acknowledge this third person? What about Mrs. Miller, Mr. Sanders? Did anybody else acknowledge this third person?
There were other students that were with me that were sitting next to me. I believe John and I thought like Kyle Gumry and Aaron Walton. These people, when I said that there was somebody out there that looked like help, you know, they wanted to see as well. So they looked out in between the tables and they saw this person as well. Mr. Sanders, he didn't really talk. The only thing that I ever heard that he had said was at 1:30 p.m. I asked how he was doing. And they said he's not doing so well. We pulled out some pictures of his family out of his wallet, and he just said, "Tell my girls I love them."
Okay.
So he didn't really have. But the thing is, when what it's described as is the boys, Dylan and Eric, started outside shooting people. Then they came. Then Dylan went down the outside steps and went into that cafeteria through the west door. Eric went to the upstairs door just above the cafeteria and next to the library. And so when he went in, Eric went over to the top of the cafeteria steps. So Eric was waiting for Dylan to flush all the people out of the cafeteria and make them run up the stairs. So when Mr. Sanders was the first person to run through, he was the first person to get shot. And I believe it was by Eric.
Gotcha.
I wasn't. A lot of the things the cops will say don't line up, but that is something that does line up.
What about, you hear people talk about that there were shooters on the roof?
From what I was understanding, that was actually a custodian.
Okay.
Because he had brought kids with him into a back room.
Yeah, I've heard two versions of that. One is was a custodian. Other people have said that there were the shooters. Okay, but your version is this.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. actually a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's custodian. Now, you also hear other people telling these stories that there could have been guys walking around with headsets. Did you see anything like that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be surprised because, like I said, the guy that I had seen with the sawed-off shotgun looked like he was military.
How did all this come to a conclusion?
That day?
Yeah.
Well, we had been sitting there for, you know, several hours. I kept putting my hands on the glass, trying to get attention for, you know, we're up here, we need help. We had one person on the phone with 911 because we only had one cell phone in the group. And at 2:57, SWAT finally came through the other conjoined classroom door. We had four doors to our classroom. They had come through the opposite one that we were sitting in. So they ended up taking us through some of the worst parts. They didn't take us through the library, but they did the cafeteria. Now, the cafeteria had the sprinklers going off, so there was 8 inches of water, and I had taken off my boots, so I was in socks. And when we got to the west side of the cafeteria, there was all this broken glass from the guns going off and, you know, where the shooting had originated. It was right outside that door. Well, I couldn't get out that door. There was glass everywhere, and there was a SWAT guy standing right there inside the door, and with his big old gun and his full SWAT gear, and he would barely talk to me. He would barely look at me. He would tell me, "I can't help you. You got to figure it out." Oh, and so the groups of all the people, one by one, people are walking by me because they have shoes on. And I'm telling the end of the group, I can't get out. So thankfully, some of those students really understood what was happening. And they went and they told Mrs. Miller, yet again, this fragile 84-pound teacher came back inside and gave me a piggyback ride.
Wow.
She took me outside, and when she went to go set me down, I was trying to make sure that I wouldn't step on glass as she was putting me down. But instead of making sure I didn't step on glass, I had to make sure I didn't step on Danny Rollerball, who would just, he died before he even fell to the ground. He was in such a weird slump. So that was traumatic to see. And then we run up the stairs, the outside steps. You can see that in a lot of the footage. Then there was another boy at the top of the steps, and I thought I recognized him, so I stopped running. I took my hands off my head. I didn't know if I was going to fall over, if I was going to throw up. I didn't know. And I was wondering why we weren't helping him, why he was just laying there. And then 15 feet from him, there was another dead boy. The next thing I know, of course, one of the SWAT guys is yelling at me, "Go, go, go, move, move, move." And we had to run through all this mud just to finally get back to a back parking lot. We would stand there for another good 45 minutes before it was finally my turn to get shoved into one of the squad cars. They had a couple Crown Vics and I want to say like the old Dodge Durango squad cars. And they would open all the doors and they would shove as many kids in there as they could get. Didn't care about seatbelts. If you can fit them in there, get them in there, get them out of here. And they went and they would, I remember they said at like just before 4 o'clock, we need one more small female. And I'm on the edge of the group. I hear that. So I run over there. I sat on some girl's lap I've never met before. I've never seen her since, but didn't really care. We were going for four-wheeling in a Crown Vic around gopher holes and, you know, the back part of the park that isn't so nice at Clement Park. And it was a good, I want to say, about a mile trek through the park all the way down back to Pierce. Now, if they took us through the west, when they took us out of the building, they took us west to go out the cafeteria and then west from that cafeteria or from that parking lot and around, then hooked back around east. Now, if they had just taken us out of our classroom and to the east down the main hall, that main hall was right there on Pierce. It ended like 100 feet from Pierce. But for some reason, they decided to take us through the worst of it, which I never understood. They didn't put sheets over dead kids, and they brought us through our safe path, which didn't look very safe to us.
Well, let me ask you a question now. Is your experience since this day in dealing with the authorities and their unwillingness to accept your story, do you think it's possible that they did this to traumatize you further, that you would forget what you saw?
I don't know. I that's an interesting way of looking at it. I've never thought of it like that, really. I think that they were just set on having their official report have everybody on the same page in the report saying the same things, because and they tried to convince over 100 people that they didn't see people that they saw that day. So I wasn't the only one, but they wanted it. It was interesting because they would come to my house and do, you know, their interviews with me and show me photo lineups. And the third time that I talked to them, they asked me to come down to the station. And looking back, I understand why they did that, because they had me go through my statement, and then they insisted that I change my story, that I didn't see Robert bring in the duffel bag, and that I didn't see this other person, this military-looking guy. It was definitely Eric in their narrative. And then I'm sitting there with my mom. I'm 15 years old, you know, and my mom is asking them why are you so adamant that she changes her story when she knows what she saw, and she's trying to tell you what she saw. And how she also mentioned how the cafeteria videos got leaked to the media when it was only in the police's custody. So there's a part in the final report from one of the investigators who wrote, "It seemed as though Nancy and Jennifer questioned the credibility of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department." And yeah, we did. We most definitely did, because when I went into that station that day, when I wouldn't change my story, that officer got really upset. He was mad at me. He was trying to intimidate me and tell me later on, after a traumatizing situation, it's hard to admit when you're wrong. Mm. And then another cop overheard that I wasn't going to change my story, so he came over to back up his buddy to try and pressure me some more. And my mom and I weren't having it. They had told me I was one of their most credible witnesses that day. In the 3.5 hours that I was trapped inside the school, everything that I say happened, they had evidence to back it up, happening within 2 minutes of when I said it happened. But I didn't see this guy or this guy. But everything else is incredibly accurate. But I got that wrong. And I wouldn't change my story.
Let me ask you this. Backing up just a little bit, when they're packing your kids into these Crown Vics, into these SUVs, how difficult would it have been for one of the shooters, besides Dylan and Eric and Dylan, to just drop their weapon, maybe change a shirt, you know, take a T-shirt off, whatever, and mingle in with the crowd and get thrown in one of the back of those Crown Vics?
Very easily, but I can tell you, I know some of my other survivors' friends saw people shooting at them that weren't Dylan and Eric, and then they saw them looking like they were arrested, sitting in the back of squad cars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I remember watching the news that day, and they talked about a car full of kids showing up, and they were wearing military fatigues, and they were stopped on the outskirts. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, actually, because we had somebody on the call with 911, and I had the TV on, and we had the people on dispatcher on the 911 call. They knew that I had the TV on, and that I had, they had told whoever was on the call talking to the dispatchers, told the people that there's somebody with me in my group that saw the gunman outside of our classroom, and then they can identify them. And they said, okay, well, we've got some people that we've detained, and they're on TV. Can you have this person verify whether or not these are the gunmen? And when I saw those three people out in that field at Clement Park being arrested wearing camouflage pants and stuff, I said, no, those were not the people I saw, and those were not students at Columbine. They were people I didn't recognize. About 5 years later, I actually met one of those people that was being detained, and I saved him from not being detained because I said he wasn't one of the gunmen. He was actually a sharp.
He was a straight-edge skinhead, is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. One of those three boys that were, young adults, probably 19 years old, out in the field, because they were over in the area and they had overheard, there was things going on, so they were curious and wanted to get closer and get a better idea of what was going on.
So you don't think they were involved?
I don't, no.
Do you know anything about one of those kids, their father being a sheriff?
No, not really.
Okay. Okay. Now we're mentioning before, though, that you saw some guys who were detained that you did recognize, and then they got all distorted. Can you go over that again?
Oh, yes. So I had had friends, the other survivor friends that were in the school that day, that saw other people besides Dylan and Eric shooting guns in their direction. One of my friends was, she said she was shot by one of these other people. And all these different friends of mine boils down to two different guys that they said were shooting in the school that day. And later on, when those kids got to safety, they had seen the shooters that had shot at them being handcuffed and put in the back of squad cars. But those people were never mentioned ever again. Although, Anne Marie Hochhalter, she knows that she was not shot by either Dylan or Eric, and she will tell you that. I don't know how openly she will, but I know for a fact that that's what she would say in her final report.
Now, you had mentioned this fellow Robert Perry before, carrying this duffel bag. Has he ever, have you ever spoken to him since, and has he explained what he was doing with this duffel bag?
No. I have not tried to have any contact with him. He, according to my other friends, he was another one of the shooters, and he's who shot a handful of my friends. If you know these people are murderers, you're not going to try and go befriend them or anything.
I got you. Now what do you think the reason is for this cover-up? Do you think it's just incompetence? Do you think it's some kind of a big plan, like a big, this whole thing had some kind of ulterior motive for this whole shooting? Ulterior motive?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think that they wanted to influence the way that people think. And how they respond to certain things, and it also, in a very sad and disgusting way, although all of us survivors wanted it to end with us, we think that they were trying to make it start with us, as if, these are the blueprints of what you should do if you want to do such a horrid act. Mm-hmm. Then you could base it off of what they did that day, and a lot of copycats or wannabes out there. So I think that it really started this chain of events where, anytime you hear the word Columbine, it's synonymous with school shooting. And I think that was part of the plan.
And what about the media? The average person would think that when the media comes to town like that, that they'd be hungry to meet Jen Thomas and hear your story. What was your experience with that?
Well, the media, especially back then, were like vultures. They were very pushy. They were very inconsiderate. They said a lot of hurtful things. They didn't know when to stop or how to be polite in the way that they asked questions. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like the media. Most of Columbine people still don't like the media because they were awful to us.
Yeah, these big events, it's amazing how they come to town and they just take over. They just take over all the hotel rooms, all the parking, all the bars, all the restaurants. They come in. It's like a little city comes to town. And arrogant people just come to town and take over. I've seen it myself with different trials back in Vegas and stuff,
Now, yeah, and they don't care if they get the story right either. They want to get it as much of a sob story or gruesome and grotesque as possible. I there's so many times I was reading the newspaper or watching television, and I'd yell across the house to my mom and be like, here's another one they're lying about, lying about my friends. And a lot of the things that I was hearing in the media just wasn't true. They didn't care it wasn't true either. They didn't want to clarify things. They just wanted to get more readers.
Now, you mentioned off the air, too, that other witnesses have suffered consequences for coming out and telling the truth. Can you give us some examples of that?
Well, I don't know that anybody suffered consequences of it. A lot of people have been told that they didn't see what they saw. There was over 100 people that saw the similar guy that I did, and the cops tried to convince most of them that it was Eric, and a lot of them just went with it because they are cops, and they thought, oh, they know what they're talking about, so we'll believe them. I'm sorry, I'm going off on a different train of thought there.
That's okay.
So,
let me ask you a question here. When you see, we're gonna change gears here a bit. When you see the shooting that took place in this school in Texas, okay? Do you think it's possible that 400 cops actually just went there and just were Keystone cops and goofballs and cowards?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Or do you think something else more elaborate was going on there?
I think that it was intentional. I think it was a lot like Columbine because, you know, they could have come into Columbine a lot sooner, supposedly. They waited hours. They could have saved lives if they had come in sooner. And that was the same with down in Texas, if they had gone in sooner. But I think that they were trying to make sure that number went up, the death toll went up, so that it would draw attention in the media and so it would influence people in certain ways and sway them into thinking, you know. And I think a lot of it is also divide and conquer, such as gun laws.
Yeah, when you stop and think that this kid down there in Texas, he had that gun for less than a week. Like, how much could he have practiced with that gun? And then you have these guys, 400 guys with all this training and equipment. It's just, the kid couldn't even drive his truck. He crashed his truck. You know, the kid couldn't drive, you know. And it just baffles the imagination, that defies all logic. You couldn't stop this kid, you know. This is just crazy.
And parents go in there and save kids instead because the cops were told not to. And, you know, I was really annoyed when I was in Columbine and, you know, we were asking boys for their T-shirts for Mr. Sanders, that when I mentioned the fire blanket, nobody else wanted to go get it. They were all too scared. It's too close to the door, you know, where they can see the gunmen go by. And, it's a man's life is on the line. And I'm thinking, you know, we got to do whatever we can to help him. You know, here I am the whole time just being vigilant and trying to help my group and to keep us safe and everything. You know, most people, when you're in a traumatizing situation and it's ongoing, a lot of people just climb up. And a lot of people don't, you'll never know who the people are that will stand up and fight or, you know, take care of the situation and, you know, be vigilant. It's, you don't find that out until that kind of situation arises in your life. And you would think with police officers that they would be more inclined to be those kind of people to step up. But until you're in that traumatizing situation and it's going on right that minute, you don't know what kind of person you are until that moment hits. And I find it very difficult to believe that over 400 police officers were all deer in headlights.
Right. Right. Well, we could go on forever. We're already so over time. We didn't even take a commercial break. You know, no, but what you're saying is so important. It's so important. It's so timely. First-hand eyewitness testimony. Much of this is the first I've heard of it. So this is just excellent testimony to add to the mix here. So I can't thank you enough. And I'd like to have you come back. I know you've had some other experiences, too, you'd like to share with us as well. But just in closing, during this episode, what would you like to leave the audience with?
Well, I just want people to know that although PTSD, getting it is not a choice, keeping it is there is a way that you can get rid of PTSD. You can rewire your brain to respond differently. It sounds like it's very difficult, but I've done it myself. It took me a few months with all my different triggers, but I intentionally exposed myself to my triggers, and I intentionally did it in a safe environment with somebody I trust with my life, and I would have that default response of, you know, freak out, panic attack, but I would tell myself, how do normal people respond to this? Because I got so fed up with it re-traumatizing me and re-victimizing me every time I had a panic attack. I didn't want to be those boys' victims anymore. So I fought back and I won. And other people can do it too. It's not as hard as it seems. You can even check out the show Rewired and it'll explain how you can do it. It's really simple.
Well, Jen Thomas, thank you so much. I would love to have you come back. We can go do a whole hour just on PTSD and what that has been like for it. Because I can only imagine it must come up every time where there's another one of these incidents. So once again, I thank you for coming on the show and reliving all this for us and giving us a new information that I've been following this for years. And this is a lot of new stuff that I haven't heard before. So thank you very, very much. Jen Thompson. Thank you so much, Jen Thompson.
Yes, and thank you for having me. It's nice to be able to have an opportunity to share the truth, get that, you know, out there.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.